Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington and JT is back in the studio. How are you doing today?
Back again. I'm having a great day. I got up, went for a run this morning and then came over here and got to talk to you.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, it's a good day out there. How far did you run?
10 miles today.
Okay. Yeah. Are you training for something or just having fun out there?
I'm just having fun out there.
Today, we're going to talk about your Phi journey, reaching Phi, and then something pretty cool, a sabbatical. You were unemployed for about 2 months as of now-ish. And we're going to go back in your story a little bit and talk about burning out because you quit your previous job.
Yeah.
Somewhat abruptly, I would say.
Right.
And then you're actually going back to work probably quite soon-ish, and it's at a startup, which could be demanding, and yet your Phi, you could not work if you did not want to. So very curious about all those pieces, as I am a very strong enthusiast for people to not go back to work.
Yes.
I try not to be too prescriptive, but I'll prescribe to you. No, I'm just kidding. I try not to be too, pushy with it. But I think a lot of times I'm just like, you know what? I don't see it. But I acknowledge that everyone is so different and we find purpose and meaning and so many things. So I try to remember that other people aren't wrong. They just don't understand yet. No, I'm just kidding.
But yeah, you've left no ambiguity as to what your position is around yeah. working, especially when you don't really have to.
Right. In all seriousness, I do need to remember and I try to acknowledge that everyone is different and it's I get it. I'm not trying to tell everybody what to do. Okay. All that said, you've been on the show several times. You've interviewed me some, maybe one of the most frequent guests out there, but as a quick intro for people that don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe, light career stuff. We will be talking job things later, but yeah, who are you? What do you do? How long have you been in Longmont? That kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. So we moved to Longmont a couple of years ago. I spent about 20 years in Austin, did most of my career there, moved out to Longmont with our kids in the summer of 2024. My wife grew up here, so it was coming home for her and a chance to not go through the Texas summers and the Texas humidity for a change. I've worked in tech. That's kind of been my day job situation. And outside of that, I like to run. I like to eat barbecue. I like to hang out with the Phi community here in Longmont. I like to try different kinds of beer. And I like to read, like we talked about before. So
right.
I do a lot of that.
Okay. Yeah. And it fits perfectly. Computer engineer as well. Beer, barbecue, all the overlaps really hits home for me. So yeah, we hang out a decent amount.
Yeah.
And I want to jump into a story. So the fact is you quit and you burned out. Can you talk a little bit about the time frame, maybe a couple weeks on either side of that delineation point? And just to set the stage a little bit, we went to economy and I think your last day was just right before you left to head to Cincinnati and your little name tag, it was JT and you're supposed to put your Phi status or yep. what you want people to know. And you put unemployed, right?
Right.
So tell us a little bit about that, those couple weeks and stuff.
Yeah. So I'd worked at my last company for just over 7 years, quite a long time. And then last summer, actually is probably would have been last July, I think, I moved from an individual contributor role where I was just mostly doing technical work into a management role. And it was also at a time where the stuff we had been working on was quite late and starting to get more attention from different parts of the company. And the amount of responsibility, and this is a case I'm going to do a lot of today of, here's the story that I'm telling myself right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it corresponds to what I was actually going on, or maybe what I was actually feeling, or maybe it's just a nice story for myself right now, but the felt responsibility that I had definitely had increased. And I think to a great extent, the expectations from my management had also increased. So I went from working pretty reasonable hours, especially for tech, to working sometimes 10 or 12 hour days, and then the kids would go to bed, and then I'd work more. And work had taken a place where it sort of crowded out a bunch of the other things that I like to do in my life, the things that I mentioned. So I was barely doing any running. I was barely doing any reading. My beer consumption had ticked up a bit, which also did not make me particularly comfortable. And I wasn't, you know, getting to quite spend the time with my wife and with the kids that I would like to. And the weeks that were kind of going into when I decided I was done, it was kind of that, you know, that thing. I was traveling a lot. So I was in management, but none of the team that I managed was local to me. They were between Texas and California. So about every 3 weeks, I would be going to one of those places or the other. And from the beginning of the year through kind of the middle of March. And that also kind of, you know, definitely took a toll on how I was sleeping and feeling and my stress level and all that. And then I kind of went through most of it thinking, all right, we're in this really stressful time of our project. We're going to clear some of those milestones. And then I think it'll chill. And I'd say two events led up to my decision to resign. One was just an offhand comment from my wife that Saturdays had basically become another work day. And I was not very useful for family things, you know, even on the weekends. So that was kind of a bummer. And then just some internal stuff. It didn't really look like the new normal for what the workload was going to be was in an area that was worth the cost for what it was asking of me at the time. The work was really cool. The situation I was in was very unique. I really liked the people that I worked with and really enjoyed the kinds of things that I got to work on, but it kept asking more from me than I was wanting to give. And it sort of came up slowly that I was like, I don't know. Okay. No, this isn't.
Gotcha. A lot of times when that happens, it's just like a little bit more and a little bit more. And it's like you said, you thought maybe the little bit more would go away,
yeah,
and it would be more sustainable, but it was like piling on indefinitely, basically no end in sight, right?
Yeah, it looked like, okay, we'll reach a sustainable point, had pushed out like, oh, it's going to be like another 9 months. And I like to work hard, right? I like to do things that are hard. I don't like to do it all the time for, you know, long periods of time. And just looking at that, I thought, you know, what I'm getting from this is no longer worth what it's asking of me. Mm-hmm. And it's time to be done.
Yeah. And yeah, it's interesting because you can do like those sprints of work, and you probably did like all through your career, like you're in some steady state while you're working on a project. And then at the end, we're like, all right, for the last 3 weeks, we got to work a lot harder.
Right.
We'll put in the time. And then after that, it's a little more chill, but it's like release after release or whatever. Or they're like, oh, a new project and you're a finisher or a closer and your team is or whatever. So they put you on the other problem project because you're good at solving the problems and stuff.
Yeah. Much of my career has had like not a regularly cadence seasonality, but some kind of seasonality to
it,
where there would be times that, you know, you would be pushing real hard or sprinting for, you know, several weeks or maybe a couple months. And then there'd be a period of time that was less strenuous or less demanding. And I could turn and maybe focus on some of the other things in my life for a little while.
Yeah. So looking back now, is there anything you would have changed how you approached the last few months or whatever to like not burn out or as much or whatever? I won't fill in the blank. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible I could have cared less, which I know would be a an approach that you would recommend.
Yeah, just test it.
Yeah,
see how it goes.
Yeah. And I did find that for a while in the fall, I would kind of go through this cycle where I'd get really invested, I'd work a whole lot, like I'd kind of mini burn out. I'd be like, I'm just not going to care. And I'd start running again and eating lunch and showering every day and all these, you know, these minor points in life. And then I'd find my interest in the work would start to come back. And then I'd start working more and start. So there's definitely a lot of this that was me, but also the culture of the company was, there was nobody between me and the CEO who was working less hard than I was, or fewer hours than I was. And of that, I was quite sure. And even though nobody had ever come up to me and explicitly said, hey, JT, you need to be working more, doing all these things, I still saw that and felt that, applied those expectations to myself. So maybe caring less, wanting to not do as good of a job. Like, I don't know, maybe that would have helped, but there's still some ambiguity in my head of how much of it was externally imposed and how much of it was something that I was really putting on myself that maybe I didn't have to. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that right now, in part because of where we were financially, just quitting was an option. And that was the one that I decided to take.
In the caring less thing, while I advise people to check it out, you know, maybe that works for you, it doesn't fit your personality and your high work ethic. So, I mean, I understand why it's not a good approach for everyone.
So. Yeah, I remember as a couple of weeks ago, I was listening to the episode you did with Rusty on how to leave your job, which was... A big portion of it was, well, just do less until they decide to fire you, because getting fired, especially when you think you're done, is much more beneficial to you than quitting. And I agree with all of the pieces of what he said, and still just could not, like, I could not bring myself to actually do my work that way. It's just not how I'm wired. It's just not how I go through the world, but.
We all have flaws.
That's, yeah. But it seems to have worked great for him and for you. So
it's fine.
It clearly works. It's just, it's not for me.
That's fair. Okay. So you reached the burnout point. You put in your notice. How much notice did you give them?
It was 8 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the reason why I wanted to really point that out is some people are like, I am so important that I should really give them a month or 2 months. Or some people are like, I'll let them know like 6 months ahead of time. It's possible that someone is that important. Probably not. You can give them like 8 days. You can give them 2 weeks. They'll fucking figure it out. I guarantee, like, you are really not that needed. I can't think of any position where they're not going to be able to figure it out super quick. As soon as you're gone, if it's like critical stuff, they'll figure it out. So you gave 8 days. Did you have any reservations about such a short time frame versus like the standard 2 weeks?
Nope. No, okay. I had no concerns about that. A lot of that was also driven by the other things that were coming up just in life. This was, you know, kind of toward the middle end of March, and economy in Cincinnati was coming up. And that's a few work days and a weekend, which for me at the time was work days as well. And then we had planned for a while to go on one of Kristen's by friends travel trips to Europe. And that was going to be another like 10 days or something. So I'm like, yeah, I could give you a month of notice, but I'm gone for 3 of those weeks. And Rusty would probably say, well, yeah, that probably should be what you should do. But I also knew we had taken a trip before while I was still working, and again, just where we were on the project and kind of where I was situated in the project. Whenever I was not working, I felt like I should be paying attention to what was going on. And whenever I was working, I felt like I should be on vacation and enjoying my time. And it was not a very fun experience. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, you know what, there's all this stuff that's coming up. I don't want to have to deal with juggling my, again, either internally or externally imposed work responsibilities and being present where I am and enjoying the things that are going on. So I probably would have done 2 weeks if it wasn't all those other considerations, but especially with those considerations, I was like, well, you got me till I'm gone. And then I'm going to focus on those other things and not on this anymore.
Gotcha. And yeah, so just to emphasize that, it's like, you can give 2 weeks, like that's kind of standard, but they would also, I mean, sometimes they fire people and yeah, it's just like, it's it. So, okay. Yeah. So that's cool. It's been a couple months. You mentioned a few trips. So we're going to talk about what you've been up to. So one observation that I have with Elizabeth and a handful of other people, it's like right after quitting, it's kind of cool to have some pattern interrupts. So trips, travel, whatever kind of thing where it takes you out of your normal routine.
Yeah.
You immediately went to Cincinnati for economy. So you got to hang out with a bunch of friends, tell people you quit, all that kind of stuff. What else were you up to? And feel free to talk about economy specifically if you had any like highlight moments out there.
Yeah, economy was great. To be honest, I felt a little weird. I don't think I actually told anybody outside of my wife that I was quitting until I went to economy, and maybe some family as well. I don't know if I just thought it'd be fun to be like, and by the way, I quit yesterday, which was fun. And there was also some part I was not willing to say that I was retired because I didn't know. I was happy to say that I was unemployed, but there wasn't a lot of thought that went into having quit. I gave them 8 days notice. I had about 12 days notice that I was going to be done because it, like I said, it was slow and then it was fast. So all the things that you talked about with Rusty, getting ready to retire and figuring out what happens with the rest of your life and financially setting yourself up to be retired and psychologically you set yourself up to being retired. I did none of that basically because it was just going to be done. And at the time I didn't know, all right, how long is this going to be for? Is it going to be for a couple months? Is it going to be for a couple years? Am I just done in this industry and I'm going to find something else? And how am I even going to think about those questions? And to that extent, it was very useful being in an environment like economy, where there are people like you and Bob Haynes and Mark Troutman and some other folks that I'd met who have been retired for a while. And I could ask questions about, all right, what do I need to think about? What should I expect to go through? Like, what kinds of emotional stages should I expect? And all of you were like in one spot. So that was definitely helpful rather than just kind of coming back home and being like, okay, great. What now? So that was nice. Mm-hmm. And it was like you said, I think it was good to have, instead of just waking up in my bed and being like, all right, well, it's Thursday. What am I going to do today? To have some structure, some intention with how I'm going to spend a little bit of my time as I went through that transition.
Have you gotten bored since you went on a couple trips, but then there's the day-to-day grind of being retired and unemployed rather.
Yeah. Bored probably isn't the way that I would describe it. There were a couple of things that I really wanted to do and wanted to spend that time on. Some of it was, I went to Cincinnati, we went to Europe. Both of those were great. I wanted to get back into my physical fitness routine, get back into running, hopefully get back into the gym. Like I hadn't been in the gym since September or something. Mm-hmm. I wanted to spend more time with the family and get to hang out with our kids a little bit more. And I wanted to do like some amount of, you call it reading, reflection, some of that. I knew there would probably be I'm going to eat pizza, drink beer and play video games time. But I thought, 2 or 3 weeks, I'd probably get over that.
Yeah.
And some of that happened and some of that didn't. I think the family stuff has been great, and I've loved getting to spend more time with the kids and driving them all over town. My wife has loved it as well because she got a bit of a break from it. I've definitely, you know, kept up with the fitness parts of it. I try to take 2 hours every day and go do something aerobic outside. It's running, it's hiking, it's biking, it's going to the gym, it's whatever. And I've been pretty consistent with that since we've gotten back from Europe. The reading has been okay. It has not been as reflective and productive as perhaps I would have hoped it would have been, but at least I've gotten some of that time in. And the reflection and the writing and the thinking has largely not happened.
Okay.
That's okay.
With the reading and reflection, can you expand on that? So are you not doing it as much as you thought, or you're reading Us Weekly or what? Can you tell us more?
Yeah. So I've been doing a lot of reading. It's mostly been, I guess there's been a little bit of nonfiction, but most of it's been fiction, most of it fantasy and science fiction. We talked about that in the episode, my interest in those kinds of books. So I have gotten to do a fair amount of reading. It just hasn't been. I'd hoped to go through things like Jordan's the Purpose Code and Ramit's journal and, you know, stuff like that, where I could really sit and kind of think about, all right, where whether I go back to work or not, like, what do I want my life to look like? What kinds of things are particularly important to me? How do I want to kind of arrange our life to focus on what we value and not spend all of it playing video games. And I spent much of that time playing video games instead. I know your thoughts on video games.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't care too much about them, but I think it's all right if people spend a little time, but it sounds like you were like, all right, play some, you know, have some fun with them, but not too much. And the other thing, you're doing a bunch of other stuff. So it's like, as long as you're not filling your time with the video games instead of like doing the family activities or like exercise, which you say both are important to you. So as long as you're doing those first.
Yeah. Getting those things done. I definitely, the rest of it was like, well, I'd have liked to have been doing those things, but also I was pretty burned out. And sometimes you just want something mindless to kind of let some of that unwind. So I didn't, like, I'm not disappointed, even though it just didn't follow kind of what I thought it was going to look like going into that time.
Slightly related, some people are very structured and they want to kind of plan their day and have like a routine, and other people are more whatever comes their way. Maybe, I mean, and I've definitely shifted more to the what comes my way. I have a couple anchor points through the week or day or month or whatever, but I'm very flexible. And if opportunities pop up, then I'll take a look at those. So how did you plan out your days and weeks? You did mention like the couple hours of exercise, but yeah, how rigid are you on a lot of that sort of planning?
I tried to have a couple of, like, you know, sort of big rocks in my day. So I wanted to be available for kid transportation, especially because, again, my wife was just kind of over it for a bit. It was a good way to get just like some of that time with the kids. So I take them to school, I pick them up from school, I take them to activities, and I do a lot of that. So I wanted to be sure that I was there for that. And then again, for, I don't know why I decided, it was an arbitrary number of 2 hours a day.
Sure.
But I was like, I want to do something. And then outside of that, I was like, well, it's fine.
Yeah. Right?
I'm just going to kind of do what I feel like. And sometimes that'll look like reading just for fun. And sometimes that might look like reading something that is, you know, more serious. Sometimes it would look like taking care of some of the household tasks that maybe I'd deferred while I was kind of working more. But I let those things just kind of mostly fall where they would. The other thing I was interested in was making sure to set up some things with other people. So we got a little more consistent going to the weekly potlucks at the co-working space or the Phi Collective or whatever they're calling it now. And then, you know, maybe once a week or so, you know, I'd go, hey, grab a couple of people and go meet up at a brewery or go have lunch or just do something to keep other people in my life as well.
Yeah. And you've done a good job. Like, you've gotten me out to hike a couple times. We had lunch. So thank you for doing that. It's easy to not do it, especially, I mean, I'm not that busy, but you know, the day fills up a little bit.
Yeah.
And I have a bunch of hobbies and fucking projects that take a decent amount of time, one of which is cooking and food, which I really enjoy, and I get into a flow state. So hours will pass and I'm like working on this. One thing I'll give you a shout out here. Like, I was working on some sourdough starter, and I bake an okay amount, and I've been doing more pizza and pizza crust and all that stuff.
Oh, nice.
But you brought over a loaf of bread, which I'm excited to get into. But can you tell us a little bit about your sourdough process and your starter and stuff like that?
This is quite a tangent. I like it. Yeah. So I started doing sourdough, man, it was probably almost 10 years ago. So it was a pre-pandemic hobby. I know everybody got to do it over the pandemic. And it kind of came and went. I was into it for a few years, and then the kids, always kids. I mean, you know, a sourdough, there's not like tons of effort, but it's a long time. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you don't decide I'm going to have sourdough, you know, this afternoon. You're like, I'm going to have sourdough like in 10 hours. And you can't just leave for the day because it's got something that it needs. So I dropped it for a little while and then picked it back up maybe about a year ago and really like it. So got a starter. I killed one starter. Mm-hmm. Womp womp.
Yeah.
But started up another one. I mostly use, if anybody's interested, I use the tartine recipe. Their country white bread recipe is their standard loaf recipe. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I alternate between, I want to kind of try to do the whole bacon one day, and then other times I'll be like, well, I'll start it in the evening, do the bulk rise and the shaping, toss it in the fridge overnight, and then bake in the morning. And that kind of doesn't cut the time, but it cuts the time I need to be paying attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Super fun. And it's a cool thing to do where you can get, you know what? Cooking is a little faster than like brewing beer.
Yeah.
Where it's like a few weeks before.
I'll have beer next month.
Yeah. But yeah. And we'll get back on track in a second, folks, but we're talking about baking and dough right now. So I killed a starter not too long ago, just over the winter. I wasn't baking as much, but I had a starter going last year. And then I had to spawn a new one up, and I was going to get some of your overflow starter, but I got it going again. And then additionally, I've been working on like pizza dough a little bit more.
Is it a sourdough pizza dough or?
Yeah. So
like it's a yeasted dough or some of both.
It's yeah. So okay. A little bit of both. Cause like, I was like my starter, like I'm not 100% sure of the viability, but I was like, it's enough to give it a little more flavor. So I just cut the amount of like dry active yeast or whatever. So, and a lot of times I'm doing like basically it's like a 5-day like cold ferment in the fridge.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's like a bulk rise for like one day, and then I split it up. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. But anyway, the little bit of yeast that you put in is so small anyway, that it's rising fine over the several days. So to your point, I'm like, oh, I want to have pizza next week.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not, I want to have pizza tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just got a baking steel. So I'll show you that when we go upstairs. Nice. All right. Back on track. You mentioned purpose in the purpose code, Jordan's book, Doc G. And I'm curious the role of like purpose with not working and then potentially working, because you're going to go back to a job, which we'll kind of get into the details. But as you were unemployed during the sabbatical, were you thinking about purpose a lot? Were you thinking that you should think about purpose, but you didn't get around to it quite yet.
Yeah, I think I'd say I thought I would think about purpose more than I actually did.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things, especially through economy and the time around when I quit. I was like, man, I really want to think about what I want to be about, what I think my, whether it's big or little p purpose, ought to be, and where work fits into that. That was one of the things I kind of wanted to do with this time. I didn't, like, maybe I'd think about it randomly when I was running or on a hike or something, but I didn't really sit down and spend a ton of time with it. I don't think I believe that, like, work is the main driver of purpose in my life. And I don't think that, like, without it, I would feel purposeless, but I don't really know much to say about it other than that, because I didn't really spend a whole lot of time thinking about it.
Right. That's fair. Well, and the thing is, even me without kids, I think kids in a family kind of gives you a purpose, like, instantly. It's just like, if you focus on that, that's probably a pretty good move.
Yeah. Like, it's a great start.
Yeah. Internally within the family, externally, like, that totally makes sense. And it's a good way to spend your time and effort. So we'll rewind the clock here, because we did say that you had reached your fine number. And in fact, your wife has stopped working. Mm-hmm. It's been like 3 years or 2 years.
Yeah, it's been
3 years.
It's been about 3 years.
Okay. Yeah. So talk about your FI journey a little bit. Were you a big saver? When did you discover the retire early portion of this whole thing?
Yeah, I'll give the high level overview. I know we talked about it the first time I was on whatever episode.
Years ago.
To have been. Yeah,
it was years ago. I think it was 69, episode 69. But,
sure. Yeah. So I was one of those always interested in personal finance. I learned a lot from both of my parents. My dad was really into investing, kind of long-term planning, kind of all those pieces. My mom was really interested in paying attention to the day-to-day budget, really navigating needs versus wants, knowing where to find a deal. And I think I managed to absorb pieces of both of those, which was great. So I was the big nerd who was reading, you know, The Wealthy Barber and The Millionaire Next Door when I was 17, 18, went through college and got out, was, you know, not a FI saving rate, but still 10, 15, 20%. Mm-hmm. So a very solid saving rate through the early part of my career. And then when I discovered the FIRE movement, it would have been 2018, something like that, through the Mr. Money Mustache blog, and then bounced around there to a bunch of different folks, and realized, well, you know, we don't really have to make big changes because of the 15 years worth of work that I've already done to get to at least like a lean FIRE kind of state. It's small changes. It's just being a little more intentional about some of the things we're already doing. So we made those changes. We, you know, I told the story the first time I was here about the grocery price tracking spreadsheet that I had kept at the time that I haven't paid any attention to since then.
Thank God. But this is kind of hilarious. So I do want you to refresh our memory on this spreadsheet.
Oh, the spreadsheet was awesome. So we had a meal plan that we kept, and then every week I would go through and, you know, look through the pantry, figure out, all right, here's what we need for the meal plan. Meal planning, I still think, is a great tactic for people to use, especially if they want to try to save money on food and save mental space on food, which is really what our thing was at the time. But I'd go through, make a list, here's all the things we need for the meals for the week. And then I'd go through, there were three grocery stores that I could go look at the prices of everything online and just be like, all right, well, I'll go to two of these stores this week. I'm going to get apples over here, and I'm going to get beans over there, and I'm going to get bread over here, right? And just go figure out, all right, what is the most optimal way for me to get our groceries for the stores that I'm going to this week? And it was completely absurd. It was probably, I don't know, it probably was $20-ish a week that we'd end up saving, and didn't take up a ton of time, but it's not something I do anymore.
They just go to Whole Foods all the time.
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, now,
do you go to Whole Foods?
No, we don't. So I don't remember if I mentioned it on the podcast before, but I think all of the grocery stores in Longmont are terrible and largely designed by people who hate food.
It is rough.
We do most of our grocery shopping at Costco now because it's the grocery store I dislike the least. But all the other grocery stores, I think, are pretty bad.
I don't go to Whole Foods too often, but it's right next door to the liquor store, Wyatt's. Mm-hmm. I'll pop in occasionally to get like one or two things, some herbs or whatever. And I'm like, ah, you know what? It's not too bad. I mean, if I did all my shopping there, yeah. I'd walk out with like a small basket, $500 worth of stuff or whatever. But a couple things here and there, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty
$485
nice.
$485 if you're an Amazon Prime member.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, wow, I could just scan the app and now they know even more about me.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think it is interesting, and depending on where you are in your Fi journey, it can totally make sense. So we're older now. Can you share your age?
Yeah, I turned 44 this year.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm 47. So it's like when we were in our 20s and we could save like $20, I'm like, that's meaningful. Yeah. It's worth our time, most likely. I'm glad to hear you retired the spreadsheet.
Yeah. And I mean, so after that, things took a turn too. So I spent a lot of time and built a lot of tactics for my financial life. And then I landed at a tech company that the stock price just shot up while I was there, and all of it's I don't know, all the work, all of the energy that I put in, like, I won't say it was wasted, because I think those skills will be useful for me, and then as we teach them to our kids, they'll definitely be useful for them. But it ended up not being particularly impactful. Mm-hmm. Because the increase in our net worth from the stock compensation that I was getting just dwarfed the $20 a week I was saving at the grocery store, right? By looking across three different grocery stores to figure out where the best deal on strawberries was that week.
Yeah.
And that really pushed us out of, okay, maybe we'll be like lean fire by 45 to no, we can basically maintain our, mm-hmm. our standard of living at least under the 4% rule for
as long 800 as years.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, like, the spreadsheet tells me that maybe you guys were fairly frugal. Is that accurate? Like, you guys were frugal?
Yeah.
Okay. And then over the past few years, after your net worth has changed and you were like, we don't need to use the spreadsheet, that's not really a great use of energy. Has your spending changed? Have your expenses changed over the years, or how you make decisions on like purchases?
Yeah, between the change in our net worth and the interests of our kids kind of combined, we definitely spend a lot more money now than we did 10 years ago, when 8 or 10 years ago when I first started finding all this stuff.
Gotcha. Can you give us like a percentage? Has it like doubled in the last 10 years or something? I mean, you moved also, and like when you moved here, you got a house and there's renovations and whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't looked at it that closely.
Okay.
So
do you know what, I mean, you don't have to say here, but do you know what your expenses are like right off the, if I'm just like, oh, what are your annual expenses? You know it.
I could get within 5 or 10% of it.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool.
And,
okay.
In large part because I've been looking at it a lot and trying to figure out, well, what's the financial consequences of potentially going to work or not again.
Okay.
So.
And we'll definitely dig into that, but sticking in the sort of Fi journey space, it's interesting you were doing a lot of like Fi community things for, it sounds like maybe 15 plus years before you found Mr. Money Mustache and like the proper Fi community in 2018. So were you just kind of in a vacuum where you were like doing this stuff and you didn't know anyone else?
I don't think I'd frame it that way. There was less of a immediate personal community for that, for sure. There'd be a handful of friends that I'd have that I could and would talk about different investment considerations or real estate or whatever. But 2006, 2007, when I was leaving grad school and getting into the workforce, that's really when a lot of the, not the FI blogs, but the personal finance blogs really started taking off. So Trent Ham's Simple Dollar and J.D. Roth's Get Rich Slowly and Ramit's I'll Teach You to Be Rich. And there's probably four or five others that I would pay attention to, but haven't followed as closely since then. Right. That was where I would find a lot more of the, you know, it's not community. So it's just reading a blog, you know, more information and kind of moving, definitely mitigated that. Okay. I'm doing this, you know, just by myself. Plus also, like I said, my dad was really into this. Mm-hmm. So, he would have book recommendations or I'd talk to him about IRA contributions and different aspects of the sort of broader personal finance topics.
Was your wife on board with everything?
She was. She's not as into it as I am, for sure. She was not reading personal finance books for fun when she was in graduate school like I was. Yeah, but she's knowledgeable about it and was certainly interested in the idea of, all right, let's position ourselves so that at retirement age, we don't have to worry. Like, mm-hmm. That's great. And then when I moved into, well, maybe we could also position ourselves to allow ourselves the optionality of not needing to work much earlier than traditional retirement age. She's like, yeah, that sounds great. And again, at that point, the changes we had to make to gain enough optionality were quite modest. They weren't like these big, oh man, we need to like move and sell our cars and do it. Like we were both, we'll buy a reasonable car and keep it for 10 or 15 years and then look at another reasonable car. Right. So yeah, it wasn't this like real huge change in how we were living anyway. And she was like, oh yeah, the optionality piece of it sounds great. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that was never an issue.
And then she stepped away from work a few mm-hmm. years ago. Has she found it good, bad?
Oh, she loves
How's it.
How's
it going? Okay.
No, she thinks it's great. She's she definitely gets to spend a lot more time with the kids than I do, but she likes that. She's been able to pursue various interests of hers. Recently, it's been writing. So she's been doing a lot and a lot more consistent writing over the last year or so, and has had the opportunity to look at a couple other things of, hey, I'm interested in, she got a certification for literacy support for a while, which was something that was interesting to her. So she's been able to pursue, you know, a bunch of the things that she's been interested in. She definitely does not have a lack of purpose and is never or rarely bored. So
she gets out hiking quite a bit. I was going to say she was out hiking yesterday with us.
Yeah, she does hiking. She's been doing a lot of gardening. At this point in our life, she does most of the cooking and the meal stuff as well. So there's all sorts of stuff that she gets to get into now that I think she really enjoys.
Anything else specifically around the FI journey that we should cover before we talk about moving to a new job?
I mean, I think for us, like it did what it was supposed to do, even in this case. You know, the I think one main benefit of financial independence, even if you don't take the retire early option, is if you find yourself in a position where you're like, man, I don't know about this. Being done is just an option that you have, and you could be done and not have anything planned for what comes next. I really think here, just in the last couple months, like we've gotten out of financial independence exactly what it is that it's supposed to do, even if there are a number of people in the FI community that will be completely baffled by my decision to go back to work.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, like, you could have stopped working, but probably a few years ago, but you continued on. Mm. And maybe that's a good place to start. Like, why were you continuing to work when you could have quit probably whenever your wife quit, perhaps, or whenever?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's probably a couple of reasons, and I'm not going to try to necessarily order them. I think there's a lot of it. I do like what I do. There are a lot of things that I get from it. Like, it's very intellectually interesting. I get to work with very smart and driven and motivated and interesting people. Most of the time, I think the demands that my work takes on my time is not too excessive or onerous. I still have time to go exercise and spend time with the family and hang out with my friends and go on trips that I wanted to go on. So there's all these other things that I think it brings into my life. And yes, of course, like, I would prefer to not have something I have to choose to do at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on any given Thursday. But when it comes down to it, on a good percentage of 2 o'clock in the afternoon on any given Thursday, a thing that I would like to do is the kind of work that I do, mm-hmm. just because I think it's pretty interesting and pretty fun. Not every Thursday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but that's part of the trade-off that I'm think about making is, all right, yeah, every job, I'd even say every coordinated effort with other people, and maybe even just with yourself, there are going to be things that are not fun about it to accomplish some goal, right? It's never going to be like all, I don't think, super awesome all the time, and you just feel great about it every day. No endeavor in my life is ever going to be like that. So it all needs to be measured on, at least in our privileged position, right? What do I get out of it versus what does it cost? And I think even non-financially, the financial parts of the industry that I've gone into are also great, but even non-financially, like, the things that I get out of it, just for the most part, they outweigh the things that it asks of me that I wouldn't otherwise want to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good answer. So you quit, you were unsure if it like meant retirement, which probably means it's not retirement. So I won't guide you too much on this question, but that way you could tell your story. So an opportunity came to you. Can you tell us broadly what's going on?
Yeah. So I think I'd say when I quit, I wasn't sure whether I would be retiring from that industry or whether I would take another job in that industry. I don't, retirement, just on the whole, I would find something to do. I don't know what it would be. I don't know that it would pay money, but I would, once I really got tired of playing video games, I would find some like probably consistent thing to spend my time. Maybe I'd start a podcast, who knows?
Right.
or a blog if I really didn't want to make any money. Yeah. So I wasn't sure, like, all right, am I going to be done here and go explore the other interests that I have? Or do I still think that there's more in this industry that I want to do and want to accomplish? And around that time, a good friend of mine who I've known, we went to undergrad together. We took a bunch of classes. He was, I don't know, maybe your undergraduate experience was similar. There were the people who, when you did homework together and they gave you an answer, you're like, are you sure? let me just double. And then there were the people that you're like, okay, great, here's the answer.
Yeah.
He was definitely in the second category. There was a small group of us. And he told me, hey, I'm leaving my job and I'm gonna start a company with some folks. And I thought that sounds awesome. Let me know what you're doing. Like, let's just see what's going to happen. And I didn't know what kind of stuff he was going to work on. I didn't know the people that he was working with, but I knew for sure, hey, if you're interested in it, it's going to be interesting work and we should at least have a conversation about it. And then we did have a conversation about it, and it turned out the stuff that they're working on, I do think is pretty interesting. The people that they're working with, I think, are pretty interesting. We've continued to talk about it, and it's seems very likely that I'll end up working with them at least for some amount of time.
And one thing, we were hiking a couple weeks ago, and I think I said, it's like one of those questions people ask, like, oh, would you do it for free? Like, if you don't need the money, would you do it for free? And you humored I'll ask you that question in a second, but basically, as I was making the notes for our discussion today, I realized, oh yeah, that is kind of a dumb fucking question in some ways. Because obviously, if you're doing work and it's a startup, right?
Yeah.
So chances are you're going to have to work pretty hard, probably for like a couple years, or if it works out great, then it's still a few years of like pretty hard work,
yeah,
long hours, travel, whatever. But anyway, the point being, the question is a little bit flawed, because obviously you wouldn't do it for free. Like if someone asked me, like trying to figure out like what job I should do, like, oh, what job would you do if you didn't have to earn any money? I'm like, probably nothing that people would pay me for. I would just like fuck around and do my own stuff all the time. So I realize the question is a little bit flawed. So we'll talk about that in the secondary part, but I am asking you now. So like, is this the kind of job you would do for free? And you could massage the question to make it an answerable question to you.
Yeah. I mean, no, I don't think I would do it for free. Again, I think anything I would take on, again, is gonna require things from me or ask things from me and give things to me. I'm not going to pretend that like financial compensation for the way that I spend my time is completely meaningless. That said, there are likely aspects of what I will be doing that I would do for free. So stuff to learn, there's probably other code that I would write, right? So I would want to engage meaningfully with smart people who are working on interesting things, right? So I'd be like, oh yeah, I definitely want to go to that staff meeting on Wednesday morning and talk about the next week and what we're going to do in that sprint. No, probably not. But there are pieces there. And part of it, I guess, too, is like, I mean, I'm working for a company. The company's goal is to make money, right? If they were like, oh, we're not going to try to make any money, we're just here for the good of humanity, then yeah, but maybe I'd consider doing that for free in those circumstances. But if their goal is to provide value in exchange for money, it seems a little silly that I'd be like, well, I'll provide you this value for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers your question. I think that's probably part of what you mean, but the question's kind of silly, but.
And it's the heart of the question, like I get it. I mean, I asked it, but then as I reflected, I was like, not a great question. So a couple things come to mind. One, with the kind of sabbatical that you took, you didn't really have an end state or how long you're going to do this. Some people may say, I'm not going to make any decisions on anything for 9 months, which I think Elizabeth said that. And I was like, why 9 months? And I was like, whatever you want to do, that's fine. But some people are like, I'm going to take an indefinite break because I just need to decompress. And yours was kind of open. An opportunity came up. 2 months is okay. But I would say for some people, that wouldn't be enough time to decompress.
Yeah.
It depends on how tightly they're wound. Do you think you decompressed?
I would say that I think so. And also everybody that I have talked to has been like, oh, nah, man, that's like a 2-year thing, not a 2-month thing. So probably not actually, but I think my felt reality is, yeah, I'm way more chill than I was
in
March.
Yeah.
Or whenever. I went through, gosh, it was probably October through February, where every time I would see a friend, even you guys, you know, we'd leave and like someone would go up to Becca and be like, is JT okay? He seems tired. And I was, yeah. So I don't think that's how other people experience me now, I hope.
You're more rested.
Yeah. But like, you know, like you've mentioned it, Carl's mentioned it, my wife's mentioned it. And I thought at 2 months I was doing great. And then 2 years came around and I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is definitely a different place. So I don't know. I feel like it is, but honestly, probably not.
Okay. Probably not. Fair. Well, you're self-aware. So it's like you're more relaxed, but probably didn't decompress all the way. And my data point, I haven't thought about this in a while. So I got laid off in 2015, and probably for a year, I didn't give a fuck. Like it didn't matter at all. And it still took me probably 6 months or so to like decompress.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, I worked on something else immediately afterward, but basically I would like wake up, or I would have dreams or whatever of like emails or meetings or whatever for, I mean, it tapered off, but yeah, at least 6 months. And I was not really invested for quite some time.
and that is one reason I don't like, I don't feel bad about not doing the productive stuff that I thought maybe I had wanted to do, where, because I'd heard enough stories of like, man, you're going to want to feel like you need to do all this productive stuff and just you'll chill. Be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I came out of it and I was like, oh, yeah, okay. I thought maybe I'd get this stuff done. I didn't.
It'll be fine.
That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. So that said, all that around, like you didn't have specific criteria for your sabbatical. And one thing that you've mentioned is like, if, you know, you're going back and if it doesn't feel right, then you're like, okay, I cannot, you could quit basically, right?
Yeah.
So do you have any criteria that you're looking at to be like, this is working or not working?
That would be a really good thing to write down and spend some more time thinking about. I think off the cuff, right, is it would be not getting myself back into a place where these other really important parts of my life are being undervalued, or that I'm not spending the time and effort on them that I would like to be for. Again, yeah, maybe there's a week or two, like it's just how this goes. But overall, right, as I look back on months, like, all right, am I being able to spend the time that I want to with the family? Am I taking care of my exercise and my eating and my sleeping and my reading and all the things that the handful of things that are really valuable in my life and really important to me? Are those things that someone looking at how I spend my time externally would go, oh yeah, this is a person who likes to spend time with his family and likes to run and likes to read and likes to spend time with his friends? Or would they be like, this guy just works all the time. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's probably the main one is just, okay, does it look like the other things that are important in my life are getting the time that they need? And it's reflective of the values that I have.
That totally makes sense. Yeah. And you can have a little score sheet each week or whatever. And you're like, how much time did I put in? Or mentally, are you spending the effort on the right things?
And I'm hoping one thing I'd like to do is actually engage both my wife and my friends of being like, hey, look, I'm not clearly so great at like recognizing this. And these are things that are important to me, especially with the ages that our kids are right now and stuff. So if it looks like that's not being reflected and how I'm actually spending my time, then please help let me know and point that out to me. So, cause that's really what I want to be aware of and focused on for at least this next season and possibly indefinitely moving forward.
Makes sense. Yeah. It's easy to kind of let the work bleed into, because you'll be working from home.
Right.
And actually going back to your point where it was like you were on a trip. Was it the Camp Fi New York
trip? Yeah, that was in New York. Mm-hmm.
Where you're like on a trip and you're like, you had a couple days where you would need to work and then you had leisure time, but it all kind of bled together. So neither felt like you were doing either. And I'm sure if someone looked at you, you were like a little distracted perhaps.
Yes. And frenetic. Yeah. It was no good.
Do you have sort of, actually that could be a good boundary to set, but I'm curious, like, would you be able to be like, I'm working like this window of time and then I'm not checking, like the computer's down there. There's no email on my phone. Like I'm only working when I go down there and that's only designated work time. Cause then you're present when you're at home. I mean, just my phone by itself is like a distraction, right? So yeah, how might you manage that? Would you do that where you're like, I'm only working these hours or what?
Yeah, no, I would like to do that regularly. Again, maybe not like every day all the time, but generally, yeah, okay, here's the hours that I'm going to be working. And then outside of that, I'm not. I think for a while at my old company, I did a okay job of keeping those things separate. I had the work email and Messenger and stuff on my phone, but I turned off all the notifications. So it was, I could go look at it, but it would never interrupt mm-hmm. whatever else it was that I was doing. When I moved into more of a management role, I thought, well, I should probably at least turn on not all of those, but some of those to be a little more aware of what's going on, especially because nobody can just walk over to my desk and talk to me because I'm 1,100 miles away from everybody else. And that did make things like harder. Like it definitely blurred the lines between work and not work even more than I was already doing just by working all the time. So I think, you know, both putting in the time boundaries as well as those notification boundaries. I've also, in the last couple of weeks, started leaving my phone in the kitchen. This is something that Cal Newport talks about a lot, is just when you're home, your phone just sits in the kitchen. And if you need to do something, you go to where your phone is and you do the thing, and then it stays there and you go do the other things. And I started that as a little experiment, and I think it's worked out pretty well. So I'd like to keep doing that even as I go through working and continue the practice of, all right, if I have to have work things on my phone, because I had authenticators and all sorts of other random stuff, then to keep the notifications off and leave it and like, all right, I'm going to pull stuff is, all right, this is work time, so I can pull the work stuff. And other than that, try to keep it out of the rest of my life to keep a nice crisp boundary between work time and not work time.
And you mentioned that, you know, money does play some component, right? Like you wouldn't do it for free. So you are taking advantage of like your experience and your network and your career and all this stuff. So you're getting paid probably pretty good. And you've hit the 5-point, probably exceeded expectations based on your broad career in mm-hmm. the last several years. So like, what is the additional money do for you? Do you care about it that much? Is it going to change decisions that you're making in the future? And again, I'll kind of leave it broad. I'll ask several questions, but like, it's like you're earning more money, but you don't need to. Why is that?
That's a good question. That's what you're supposed to say when you need a little more time to think about the question, right? That's a really good question. I mean, I don't know that we have any specific plans for it. We have over the last couple of years, and I think the first episode that I was on, we talked about a trip that we took then that was more money than we had spent on those kinds of trips up to that point. Are we going to like it enough more to want to do it? And it turns out we really liked it. And so some of it is allowing some of that, you know, lifestyle inflation to continue on and to be able to try some new things. Some of it is, you know, to have the opportunity to let our kids explore their interests, sports and music and whatever, to just do them doesn't have to be expensive, I think, but like, if we have the money to allow them to explore those interests to a more arbitrary level and not have to have finances be a huge concern and allowing them to explore that to the extent that they would like to, like, I think that is an opportunity I would like for, mm-hmm. for them to have. There's a balance for sure in that I don't want them to be able to do everything that they want. I want them to understand like, oh no, we have to make trade-offs. We have to have priorities. We can't just have everything. But at the same time, if there's something that they're really interested in, I don't want to just be like, oh no, you can't do that because I say so.
Yeah.
We do like to give money away to various causes that we believe in and think are worthwhile. We can give more money if we have more money. That's something that we're interested in as well. But other than that, I mean, I don't know. So it's some nicer stuff. It's some kids stuff. It's some being able to give more stuff away. But it's not, I mean, you asked before, hey, would I do it for free? And I wouldn't do it for free, but it's also not a scoreboard that I have, mm-hmm. right, internally. It's and I think that may be what that question's trying to get to as well, is like, hey, are you going to go do something that makes you miserable just so you can run up your score on this, how much money am I making scoreboard?
Yeah.
I don't want to be taken advantage of, but it's also not the scoreboard that I want to be using for, okay, how are things going?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. It's stuff, you know, that we think about. It's like, we're very, we put in a lot of hard work. We're lucky. A lot of our friends, like, they don't need to work anymore. But some of them do, or they have other interests. And it's like, obviously, we wouldn't do this stuff for free, but some of the stuff is fun. And what is the end goal? In your case, you gave us so much context, but like sometimes people are like, well, if you really want to have that super, whatever, nice home gym, you could just join a nicer gym. Or maybe you could build the whole home gym and it costs a lot, but maybe it's like $50,000 or something. And it's like, well, that's you could maybe do that now, but yours is, again, a whole context of something different. But it's interesting to think about. I think we covered everything that I had on my list. Do you have anything else, any thoughts as we've had the conversation?
I don't think so. I mean, I think maybe the one thing that would be there is, I know there is a lot of, not pressure, but I think especially in the Phi community, there's a lot more people with your view than with my view, right? Of, hey, you know, we really want to get to a point where we don't have to work anymore. And then we're just not, because we don't have to. And I can certainly understand that for a lot of people with how their work goes, that's a very reasonable and rational position to take. But I on the other hand, I listened to folks like Cal and a number of other folks and see my own experience where, hey, if you're able to build a career where you have autonomy, mastery, and purpose, and you're able to not have it take over your whole life, that there are things that it can give you, that even though there are things about it that aren't going to be awesome, there could also be things about it that are, and maybe that are in a way that you would not be able to find outside the corporate context. And again, that's not for everybody either, but I think it will be for some people. And again, not having to feel like, all right, I'm just running toward early retirement, because that's like the goal. Like, that's not the only game of life that's out there to be played either. Optionality is great. Definitely worth pursuing that, because things can turn on you and whatever your situation is. But I think sometimes, especially a lot of the Phi events, there is a big push on, well, of course, like, we're all doing this to not have to work anymore, right?
Right.
And maybe, but also maybe not, because I think there are, in some circumstances, things that your work really can provide for you and bring into your life. And sometimes I think that's going to be a lot more than what it asks for you, at least for a while. So.
Well said. I think Elizabeth was turned off by some of the maybe more aggressive, like, hey, you should definitely quit your job. This, of course, was before she quit. Then after she quit, she was like, oh, this is fucking awesome. But all that to say, like, I do understand, even though I give you a hard time, and specifically in the opening here today, like, I understand that, like, not all jobs are horrible. Like, it could be great when you have the right team and you're working on stuff, all the things that you said. So I totally get it. And I mean, like, I'm working on the podcast, right? So yeah. I'm like spending time on this. Not a ton, and I've stripped away as much of the you know, you described, like, not everything's going to be awesome. Like, even a cool job that I made up myself has like admin and other stuff right. where I have to like do paperwork and taxes and stuff. And I push off as much as I can, but it's pretty fun in a lot of ways. Like, it's a reason to have these conversations that we normally wouldn't have. Although actually this is a completely normal conversation.
That's right. We have these conversations regularly. And I mean, don't get me wrong either. Right. Like, the last couple of months have been amazing.
Yeah.
And I think putting yourself in a position where you could be unemployed and not have to stress about it is both, again, a very privileged position and really awesome. And to be in a spot like right now where if this job didn't work out, I just get to go back to spending 2 hours a day going hiking or running or doing whatever and going to breweries on Thursday afternoons with my friends and pursuing the things that I'm interested in outside of what I've built my career out of, because there's a lot of those things too, right? Whether it's reading or building community or music, or there's all sorts of other things that I'm interested in that's not just the work that I do. Like, if you can get yourself in that spot, it's really great. Mm-hmm. And to be in a spot now where I'm like, yeah, I could go back to work or I could not. And those are both wonderful opportunities. Like, it's a really great and fortunate position to be in. So I also don't want to be like, oh yeah, work is like the best. There's lots of good ways to, mm-hmm. I think, build a life. And the last couple months, I think, have been really great for me, and I really enjoyed them.
Is there anywhere that people should follow you? I can't remember.
No.
You're off the grid. Okay.
No.
All right. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Come find me at a campfire or some fire event.
Which campfire are you going to this year, 2026?
Yeah. So this year I'll be at Rocky Mountain week 2.
Okay.
Yeah. So the second weekend, there's like 5 of them now.
I know.
It's incredible.
He opened up a new one, and I think this will come out like right around that time frame, which is kind of cool. And I think, so 2.5 just opened up a little while ago. I think I may go to that one. Not 100% sure. But anyway, people can see you in person occasionally at the Phi Collective, maybe at a Camp Phi, maybe at Economy, that sort of thing. So thanks for joining me. It was really fun.
Yeah, it was a great time.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Phi podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number 1, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number 2, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number 3, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. Like last week, I interviewed some folks, Kristen and Pete, that they're kind of minimalist. They live in an RV. So through necessity, they've gotten rid of stuff. And it kind of inspired me to do a little bit of that myself. I'm kind of a pack rat. I like it. You know what? It's just easier to keep shit around. So I've gotten rid of a bunch of books, which we actually talked about on that specific podcast. So I'm in the process of seeing if anyone's interested in them. If not, I'll just donate them. But it's been good. I obviously don't miss the books because I had a few of them for several years, and I'm not going back and rereading many books. So it's been good. to just get them off the shelf. Some were sitting on the floor. I had so many books in limited space. But I'm curious about you. And if you're kind of a minimalist, have you looked at that kind of stuff? Or the opposite, pack rat?
Well, first, I think the right solution to having books on the floor is more bookshelves. It's not to get rid of the books.
Burn the books.
I'm a big fan of books, so it's been hard for me to get rid of books over the years. I'd much rather just put more bookshelves in to keep them all. How else will you deal with like that one conversation you might have where you're like, man, there was this book that had this idea and oh man, I got rid of it. I like the idea of minimalism. I like to be sometimes put myself or the family in circumstances like being in an RV where you have to be minimalist just to kind of realize, oh yeah, there's a whole bunch, the set of stuff that we need on any given week is actually quite small. My day-to-day life probably doesn't like reflect that. If you look in like my little office space, there's stuff all over the place. And I've been acquiring clothes more than I'm getting rid of clothes. So the drawers in my dresser where I keep my clothes get a little harder to close every month or so. And I keep thinking, man, I need to go through and like get rid of stuff that I'm not wearing anymore. You know, the 15-year-old marathon t-shirt or whatever. Right. I just can't be bothered to get around to it. But I like the aesthetic, right? Of stuff that's like clean and that there's lots of space and that, you know, areas have a purpose and the purpose is clear when you look at it. We got two kids, man. I got time for that.
Yeah. I was going to say. Well, and you have a hell of a bookshelf. I mean, you guys have like some really nice built-in shelves at your place and tons of books. You're avid readers. So, I mean, it makes sense to have a lot of books.
Yeah. My wife and I both love books and our kids are getting there as well. So we've got bookshelves, not in every room of the house, but in lots of rooms of the house. And books in particular are definitely a thing that I'd rather keep than get rid of.
Yeah.
But a lot of other things, you know, I think kitchen is an area where I prefer to be minimalist. I've had a discussion with my wife several times. I have a distinct disdain for single purpose kitchen appliances or tools. Like an avocado tool. I don't know if you've seen those. It's got like the little knife on one end and the little thing to take the pit out. And I was like, you can do this with a knife.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just totally. The same knife that you do all the other things with. But sometimes stuff like that will show up. And I'm like, why do we have this?
Yeah. 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 Unitaskers. Yeah. Alton Brown's big on that. I think like a garlic press is another one. Like you can't use a garlic press for anything else, right?
That's right.
So interesting. Yeah. Well, and it's funny, two things are kind of amusing. I think we recorded an episode about reading and books and stuff, right? Didn't we do that? And the funny part is I'm like, I'm going to declutter by getting rid of books. Like I could have gone for the junk, but nope. I'm like, let's get books were on the floor.
You got these little plastic hands up here, but the books are the things you felt like you needed to get rid of.
The little plastic hands are extremely useful for tons of different stuff, mostly distracting Carl when he's over. He's like, well, did you put these here? Like, is there a fidget spinner over there?
There's a fidget spinner over here.
Put anything over there and he's like messing with it.
A bunch of guitar slides. You got all sorts of stuff over here.
Yeah. I got to use those. I need like, three different slides, all different materials.
Yeah. They'll but no, it's the books. It's the books that have to go.
Get rid of the books. Those are the thing that was holding me back the whole time.